Blog Talk Radio.
Psychiatrist in private practice since 2003. Dr. Carroll previously was the Director of Inpatient Services at the Bay Pines VA Hospital and the Bay Pines VA Medical Center. Dr. Carroll specializes in the treatment of children ages 6 and older and the treatment of adults, all the words from womb to the tomb. She's also an all-time triathlete. If you're having any problems breaking through to the next level of athletics, or if you're having any problems, don't take it out on your neighbor. Don't take it out on your family. Take it to Dr. Carroll. She will help you out. Her number is area code 813-689-2466. Her offices are located at 336 East Bloomingdale Avenue in Brandon, Florida. Well, guys, it's good to have you back.
Good to be back.
It was a great week, huh? But, Ty, I got to ask you, I just asked the why would a fighter from Pensacola, Florida, ever want to have a Russian citizenship? I think I stumped him.
This is Vidal. First of all, how you doing, Butch?
I'm doing good. Doing good, thanks.
Good. Well, Roy Jones is world-renowned, world-known. So, I mean, I don't understand exactly why he would do it, but, I mean, he's very much capable. I'm pretty sure Russia wouldn't mind having him as a citizen. I mean, he could still produce money.
Right. I don't know if he knows what the tax base is over there. Maybe that's what he thinks he's going to get away from. But Putin actually shook hands with him and welcomed him to Russia. And now his take on the thing was, I've flown to Russia 11 times. I love the country. I want to become an active member of Russian society. I love the Russian society. It likes me. There's a guy who's looking at the grass on the greener side of the pasture. When he gets over there, he's going to be looking at the grass maybe on top of him.
Russia wants him. Russia wants him, and it's, to be honest, as far as the boxing market, it can be lucrative. You have a lot of good fighters from Russia and from the former Soviet bloc. So, mm-hmm. I mean, you do have that market over there, and Roy is a guy who can generate that kind of money just off of name alone. And mm-hmm. so, that, I mean, and if he likes the country, I mean, there shouldn't be a problem with him moving there.
No, but he has been blackballed. He can't fight in Crimea, so he thinks that the brothers Klitschko had something to do with him being blackballed over there.
That's in the Ukraine.
Yeah, but you know, it makes a lot of sense for him to, in a sense. You know, when I first read it, and I read it on CNN, it was a little surprising, but it makes a lot of sense because he spends a lot of time in Russia and Moscow now. A lot of his fights are over there. And like Zito said, he's still a marquee name. And what you have to remember is Roy Jones is a guy who absolutely refused to travel abroad during his prime. So none of these magnificent boxing fans in Russia and the former Soviet republics got a chance to ever see him perform live. So for them, it's a treat. Even though he's going over there, he's fighting a lot of no-name opposition. Just the opportunity for them to say they've gotten to see him perform live, I think, is a big benefit for them. So it makes sense logistically, even though it sounded a little shocking at first.
Yeah.
Hey, Butch, did you?
Yeah.
I read some news today. Some really, really, really good news. And I was wondering if it came across your ear. If not, then I'll be really happy to break it to you. But I was reading today that the Cherry Bomb, one Mr. Edner Cherry, is lined up for a co-feature slot on Showtime. Probably looking at October the 3rd. He'd be fighting on the undercard of the Adrian Broner fight. He would be fighting one Jose Pedraza, and it would be for the IBF super featherweight title.
Yeah, I had a chance to have lunch with him on Thursday afternoon in Birmingham. And they were breaking it to me then. But I'm glad you were able to break it on the air here so our fans know it, because we know we have a lot of Cherry Bomb fans. But that just is tremendous for the kid. You know, this guy, you couldn't ask for a better person as a friend or as a fighter. He does everything he's asked of him. He does it in a professional manner, and he does it everything. When he goes on the field with his sons, he takes the time out of his day to go home to make sure that his kids get to practice. We had a couple games against each other. His son is just as aggressive on the field as his dad is in the ring, but he's just as nice outside. I mean, they really have a nice family. I was proud of that one. I'm glad you were able to get that. Let our fans know.
Very happy to read that. He's a good guy, and you know we're all pulling for him. So,
sure.
You know, and the funny thing is how long he toiled how long he's been holding obscurity. And it's funny, you know, he signs with the Power Advisor. He's on. He does his part in the ring. He's on a 6-fight winning streak. Finally gets a shot. So good for him.
Great. Yeah.
And Edna's a very exciting fighter to watch. I mean, he comes to fight. He brings the fight. And he's not coming in there for a point to win. Edna's coming in there to knock the other guy's head off. And the guy, I mean, he's a soft-spoken guy. He's real honest. And to be that way, and you see him in the ring, that transformation, I mean, that's, I mean, to a certain extent, that's wonderful. But it's going to be a tough fight. It's going to be a tough fight. Pedraza is very, very well schooled. I'm not sure he has the fight in him that Edna has, but Pedraza, he has a pretty good toolbox, and he'll use
He performed really, really well in winning the vacant title, beating Andres Klimov, who's actually going in probably as a slight favorite. And Pedraza just boxed really well, and that's what he seems. He seems to be a very mature boxer. He doesn't have tremendous power, but he's going to make Edna work for it. So, you know, and that's what Edna, I'm sure Edna wants. He wants a challenge. You know, he's not giving the gift for the title. He's going to have to work for it.
The other fight that is it on, is it off, is the Mosley fight. What do you think? How do you think that's going to go?
Well, you know, right now it comes down to Don King and the day in court.
Yeah.
Shane Mosley admitted initially Shane Mosley was like, there's no way Don King's going to be able to stop this fight. You know, he says his attorneys were all over it. But just as recent as yesterday, he admitted that he is worried that Don King may be able to pull the plug on his fight. And you know, he has Shane Mosley is not only fighting, but he's acting as the chief promoter for this event as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's already facing an uphill climb as it is. Mosley, Mayorga, both are past their primes. They're putting this fight on pay-per-view opposite of Santa Cruz against Abner Maris, free on ESPN. So the card is already facing an uphill climb. And, again, Mosley's admitted that he's worried that, you know, King could torpedo it. So, yeah, it'll be interesting. For those that are interested, a lot of people aren't interested in the card at all anyway, so...
When it comes to lawyers, it's hard to deal with Don King. It's simple as that.
Sure.
I mean, he's very, very astute. He's a very astute businessman, and
apparently, Don King has a contract that Ricardo Mayorga signed, re-upping with him, that would essentially preclude Mayorga from fighting. Without Don King's approval, obviously, if he's still under contract with Don King. Or, at the very least, Don King would have to get paid. And so Shane Mosley said his attorneys are refuting the signature on the document, but the one thing Shane Mosley did not say was that there was not a document, that there was not a Ricardo Mayorga signature on it. So, again, if Mayorga's put pen to paper, it could very well be a torpedoed card, or again, we could see Don King just get paid, you know, some kind of city.
It's amazing how the voice changed from Monday when he said there's no way that he's going to keep me out of this ring, and to yesterday's I'm still worried about it. That's tells me a whole lot. With the script here. My goodness gracious, it's all over the place. Did you happen to see the Stevie Cunningham post fight interview Fight News?
I did not.
Yeah, Stevie feels that he won the fight. Let's see if I get one of his quotes was. He said he did everything he needed to win the fight, and that Tarver emerged victorious, but he shouldn't have. He thought he had everything that he hit him with everything he possibly could. He hit him with 678 punches, and. To 450 punches from Tarver, He said, you know, he outworked him. He should have been given the fight. What do you guys think?
But you know what? To revisit that fight, I honestly thought Stevie outworked him too, and I thought Stevie might get the nod on the judges. But again, I say might because I thought Stevie outworked him as the 600 some odd to 400 some odd punches proved. But if you go and look at the punch stats and look at how many of those punches were landed, Tarver was far and away the more accurate fighter. And Dr. Chris, just last week, said he thought at times that Stevie looked amateurish in that fight. I, for one, thought there were times where Stevie looked confused about how to attack Antonio Tarver. I thought the draw, which was the decision given, was a fair decision. Again, I thought Stevie would have gotten the decision by work rate alone, but with that said, when the scorecards were announced as a draw, I completely concur with that. I didn't think there was anything wrong with that decision at all. And, you know, again, this is just my objective opinion from the outside looking in. It looked like a very clean decision to me.
And to be honest, I agree with you. And I think that Stevie was confused. He was confused. Early on, he looked good, but it looked like Tarver adjusted to his game plan, and Stevie couldn't adjust back. It's one thing to outwork somebody, but you have to be effective within your work rate. Because, I mean, if it takes 10 strokes to dig a hole, and then a guy can do it in two, then who's more effective, to be honest?
Right. Guys, we're joined by Dr. Chris.
There he is.
Hey, how you doing, guys? I'm sitting here getting ready to watch the Eagles.
There you go.
Oh, who do they play? What they look like tonight? Everybody up here is waiting.
Is this Sam Bradford's first night, Chris?
Yep. He's going to start. Yeah. And DeMarco Murray is going to start.
Yeah.
Okay. So everybody up here is waiting. 7 o'clock.
The question is Sam Bradford going to finish? That's a big question.
Yeah.
Sam Bradford.
No. He won't. He'll be lucky to play a quarter.
Just because he's so injury prone, you know?
That's what you have to worry about with Bradford.
Yeah, he's got to go through a tough season. Yeah. We're going to find out if Kelly knows what he's doing or not.
Yeah,
you know, signed up all these guys that are questionable. And the linebacker, he hasn't played all spring. They got from Buffalo. So we'll find out tonight.
Yep.
You know, we'll see what's going on. What's going on in the fight game?
Well, two of the things we were talking about, Chris, was that Roy Jones Jr. announcing that he was going to get a Russian citizenship. Then the other thing we were talking about was the Cunningham and fight and some of the quotes that Stevie had in Fight News this week.
Who had the quotes?
Stevie did. Well, they both did, but Stevie felt
Steve
that he outworked him. Yes, that's what Ty was just saying. He thought he won the fight, but he didn't look that good.
Didn't look good. Looked like he didn't know what he was doing out there. Looked like a novice. He was jumping around, throwing too many punches, and staying on the outside. I mean, he didn't fight his normal fight. Left his feet too much. He was off his feet, on his toes too much.
Yeah.
So, everybody has a bad fight once in a while, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So who's fighting tonight?
Nobody. Nothing's televised tonight, I believe.
Nothing's on television, huh?
No. Next week we have a fight. And then let me ask you guys another one that's coming up in the near future. Is the Butte fight. How do you think that's
going to
go?
Well, actually, Butte fought last week, and he won by fourth-round knockout. It was his first fight after a 19-month layoff. You know, he's a guy who at one time, he was considered possibly the best super middleweight. Obviously, you know, Showtime had the Super 6 tournament, in which it really, you know, crowned Andre Ward as an elite fighter. But what it also did was really put Carl Froch's name on the mat, too. Carl Froch kind of really came away from that tournament, shining, so to speak. Lucien Boutte was a guy who wasn't included in the tournament, but at the same time, he was destroying the competition, had an undefeated record. And so he was looked at as the rival to whoever was the winner of the tournament. Obviously, Andre Ward went on to win a tournament. As we all know, Lucien Boutte went over to Nottingham and was absolutely destroyed by Carl Froch, and he hadn't been the same since. He had, you know, suffered several injuries, one being his back. He lost a very uninspired decision to Jean Pascal, and he had been out for 19 months. But, he came back. He looked a little reluctant, a little tepid in the first round or so. But once he got his legs under him, he did what was expected of him. He slashed the skills that he has.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, confident Lucien Boutte is a problem. It's a problem. And if you can't match him on a certain level, then it could be an early night. The guy, he's pretty quick. He moves his feet well. He hits hard, and he's generally educated both offensively and defense. Only thing is, if you start matching Boutte in something, then you're going to eventually overtake him, because he's not a guy who turns uphill from downhill. I mean, he's going to, if it starts going one way, it's going to keep going for Boutte. He's kind of a front runner. He needs to be in the lead, because in adversity is not his friend. So.
What about
Boutte's got a good left to the body, and that became his favorite punch. But that's
dangerous
punch to throw.
He threw like a little uppercut, so to speak. Yeah,
an uppercut. Yeah, that's you're right. Very, very vulnerable to a straight right hand right on the jaw. I don't know.
You know who else throws that punch too? Is Zab Judah. And, man, it's funny to actually mention something Zab Judah does. But, yeah, that's a punch that Zab Judah will vary, and he'll throw it to the body or bring it upstairs to the head. You're right. Lucien Boutte stopped Edson Miranda with that same punch to the body. I believe he also dropped Andrade, Daniel Andrade, punch to the body too.
He got away with it.
Yeah.
And, he kept doing it. Now, there's somebody sees that, and says, wait for him to throw it, and throw a counter right hand right on his chin. It'll knock him silly. And he did get beat. Who beat him? I forgot. Forget who beat him.
The most recent one was Pascal.
Frosch gave him a good shellacking?
Yeah, yes. Frosch
destroyed
him.
Did he leave Montreal?
Yeah, he went over to Nottingham.
Oh, he went over to England, huh?
Yeah. And you know what? And what happened was, it's funny what Zito said about if you match Lucien Boutte. Carl Froch is not typically a fast starter. Lucien Boutte is a pretty quick starter. Lucien Boutte came out, and he caught Carl Froch with a couple shots. Carl Froch just walked through it and caught and hit him back, and there was a difference in the way they responded to the shots. And essentially, when Carl Froch walked through a couple of shots and fired back, you could see he really kind of took Lucien Boutte's confidence, and from that point on, he was kind of fighting panicky.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And he just couldn't keep Froch off of him at all. He just could not keep Froch off of him.
Froch could drive anybody crazy with that crazy damn style he's got.
Yeah.
You don't know how to fight him. I mean, he does unorthodox things, and against a left-hander, he probably had his number. Probably had Lucien Boutte's number. Because I didn't see the fight, but I know I heard later on that he lost his first fight. But, he had everything to his own in Montreal. He was getting some setups.
Yeah.
And I don't think he was the fighter. He had fought some easy opponents. They get the shortest guy around for him, to make sure that, some guys were 4'10" fighting him, So he had a lot of things in his favor. And then when he went over to England, wasn't in his favor. He got tough good, huh?
And you know what? That's exactly why he went to England, because, he felt that he wanted to go leave home and prove himself, and it didn't go well for him. So, kudos to him for taking a chance, but it really didn't go well for him. He was absolutely destroyed.
Mm-hmm. He got knocked out, huh? He got TKO?
Yeah. Fifth round TKO, yeah.
Well, that one guy he fought had him out, that rough guy.
Andrade.
Got him out, and he got lucky.
Yeah. Yeah.
He got lucky. He should have lost that fight.
Yeah.
You know? So, oh, well. And I get, we got some good ones coming up. It's just that through the summer, I guess they don't want to compete with football for a while. You know, no, nobody's making any matches. You know, and it seems like we got to wait now. What's the date for Triple G and Lemieux?
Ooh.
Anybody know?
October.
Is it October?
Something. Yeah, I'd be lying.
It's only
if I
a month and a half away.
Yeah, but it's October.
What a fight that's
sure
going to be.
Oh, yeah.
That's fight of the year.
I don't think so. I don't think so, Dr. Chris.
Could be devastation of the year.
Yeah, it could be a performance of the year, but I don't think it's going to be that. That it won't be
I don't
long
know.
Enough.
I like both fighters. I like
for it
both
to be the
fighters.
Fight of the year, man, it's got to be very competitive and last a you know, good couple of rounds. And
yeah.
You think Lemieux can last? And
no.
Maybe competitive.
Lemieux is going to win the. He's going to win the haircut of the night. He's got the. He's going to win that. He's got that prison haircut. That's when he went to Broadmeadows prison. That's the kind of haircut they gave. He shaved your head all the way on top, left a little bit of hair up there for you. That's what he. I don't know who. Somebody must have told him he looks good in that. Damn. But anyway. He's a rough guy. And he gets in close. He throws that bam, bam, that right hand, left hook hard. I mean, if Triple G knocks him out early and wins a lopsided fight, nobody's going to beat Triple G.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I was thinking of here, and I couldn't remember his name? Who was the Argentine middleweight who must have had 20 title defenses, never lost, big six-footer?
Carlos Monzon.
Carlos Monzon. He could give Triple G a fight. A guy like that.
You know, Monzon had 3 losses in his entire career. And those 3 losses came within the first 2 years of his career. From that point on, he won 80 straight fights.
Yeah.
Wow.
And Monzon, he could box inside and outside, too.
He could box, he could punch through the right hand and grab you. You couldn't get away from him. He's a hard guy to fight.
Yeah.
And he was a full 6 foot. I don't know how he ever weighed 160 pounds on a scale. I like to have that scale. I'd weigh about 130 on that damn scale. He must have got weight on a special scale because he was big.
Big
shoulders. You know, when I saw him fight Briscoe, you know, I said, man, he made Benny look bad. He just jabbed him, hit him with the right hand, hold him. And made Briscoe look like a lightweight. He was so damn much bigger. But anyway, I was thinking, what if he could just, you know, get them two guys together? That would have been a hell of a fight. Triple G and him, you know? But I couldn't think of his name, but I know he beat everybody. I mean, nobody, you know, he just retired. He retired unbeaten. How many title defenses did he have? Like 20?
Bernard Hopkins beat his record. So obviously it was right around 19 or 18 19, or 20. Yeah. Yeah.
That would have been a good fight, him and Hopkins. Him and Hopkins would have been a good fight. Well, anything would have been a good fight. Anybody would have. Just a hell of a fighter. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah,
so when is Canelo and the Puerto Rican fighter? When are they going at it?
I believe that's in November, Zito. Am I correct?
Yeah,
November?
I think it's
November 21st.
Cotto.
November 21st.
Cotto.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cotto. Yeah. November 21st. That's exactly when it is.
Yeah.
That'd be an interesting
I was talking to Kathy Dew this week. She's over in. She's over in Russia trying to get her boy signed up for a couple big fights over there. But she told me that Adamek is coming out of retirement.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, he's going to fight in September. He's going to fight over in Poland.
Yeah, I read that.
What weight? What's he going to fight, as a heavyweight?
I would imagine
probably
so.
Yeah,
he can't make
that
cruiserweight anymore.
Yeah.
No.
Probably have to fight as a small heavyweight.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
He's not big enough. He's not big enough to put a dent in that heavyweight division.
And you know, not big enough. And at this point, I don't think Demick is fighting necessarily for the, you know, to try to, obviously, every fighter thinks they still have something left, but I think he kind of knows where he's at in his career, and I think he realizes that he can monetize his name, kind of like Roy Jones is in Russia. He can monetize his name in Poland just by doing what he loves.
Yeah, Demick's not, he's not with the top competition anymore. Even his style of fighting, he's not fast anymore. He's not going to get to point A to point B like he used to, especially with his feet. So he's basically in the marketing stages of himself now.
And you know what? You can't blame these guys. These guys love the sport. You take a guy like Demick, who's been a two-time world champion. First of all, obviously, boxers are among the most delusional guys on the earth. But the fact of the matter is, too, if you can monetize your name based on doing just what you love, how can you blame these guys for doing that? So I think it's good.
It's been their job for 20-something years. So.
Yeah. It's tough to turn down a big payday.
Exactly.
The
one thing that Kathy did say was that Demick had saved quite a few shekels and from his purses, and he had invested into a lot of property up in the North Jersey area, and was starting to sell it off and living a good life over in Poland. And so I was surprised as when she told me. She will be on the show in a couple of weeks. She just didn't want to have to. She thought at the time we were on tonight, she would be in negotiations. And she didn't want to have to break negotiations or be on with us and then have to leave. But she'll be on in a couple of weeks and explain everything. But she really, I thought, is doing a tremendous job for her fighters. And she's trying to get not just fights for them, but some pretty decent stuff.
And you can live a good life in Poland on $80 a week. You know? Kielbasa is cheap over there. You know?
Sauerkraut
and kielbasa is cheap. $2 a day, you eat sauerkraut and kielbasa all day long. You know? So we'll see. We'll see. That's funny. So Kathy went going around the world now, huh?
Yes.
Her father was a her father was a trip. He was funny. Lou was a
big Lou Dubas fan. I was a big Lou Dubas fan. Lou Dubas.
He was funny, too.
Put the microphone in his face. He'd say what he wants.
And don't forget, Lou Dubas had all those guys from that 84 Olympic squad, Holyfield and Sweet Pea. I mean, I like Lou Dubas, man. He was a funny guy, too.
Before that, he was promoting amateur fights.
Yeah.
And then he turned pro. That rock star, what the hell is his name? Jewish name. He's the one that put all the money up for Duva.
Rock Newman?
Trying to think. No. He was an investor. He promoted all the rock stars, all the concerts.
Promoter. Oh yeah, those guys. Yeah, just like Al Haymon was.
He had a
promoter.
Ton of money, and he's a guy. He's a guy that put Duva where he was. He bought all them fighters, and then from that day on, Lou was on top of the world. He was working for the Teamsters, local 216. I had to call him a lot. I had to call him up there a couple times. I was Provenzano's. I was Provenzano's union. That's where Provenzano, who they suspect buried Alpha. They think he's the one that was the union. Lou worked in that union. He worked up there.
Wow.
I used to call him, and he was promoting amateur fights then, and in Tatawa. at the ice up in, well, it's actually Patterson. Then I'm Shelly Finkel was it?
Shelly Finkel, yeah, Shelly Finkel.
I think that was a guy's name.
Yes,
he
I
made
remember
so
Shelly
much
Finkel.
Money
yeah.
in the music business.
Yep.
That he didn't know what to do with it, so he started promoting fights. And then he had a good run with Hollyfield.
Yeah,
and
he had a piece
made
of,
a lot of
a
money
piece
on
of Tyson
Hollyfield.
For a little bit too, right? Didn't he have a piece of Tyson for a little bit too, as an advisor or
not,
something?
Not that I know of. I know that once Don King got his hands on Tyson, Tyson was done.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, he had Tyson under such a strong contract. Tyson called up the guy from around here, Lewis. Butch Lewis.
Mm-hmm.
Come see him in prison. He wanted to drop Don King. He says, you could drop him, but you'll be fighting for nothing for the next 5 years. He said, he's got you. He'll get the percentage, biggest percentage of your purse for the next 5 years. You're gonna have to put up with the guy. Butch says, I can't do anything for you. Okay. I was laughing. The definition of a nightmare is Don King having power of attorney for your money while you're in jail.
Wow.
That's what he had for Tyson. He had power of attorney. I swear he hired the world's worst lawyer to represent him in that rape case. I don't believe he should have gone to jail, well, not yet. I think that was the worst handled legal, you know. Don King got him that lawyer out of Washington. You should have heard the lawyers argue over. Even the mediocre lawyers around Delaware County said, I could have got him off. At least they all say that. But
he said even mediocre
I just think Tyson got railroaded. You know? Who the hell knows?
Hey,
but
you know,
anyway,
another guy that's a friend of ours, Brian Minto, is looking to get back into the boxing arena. He's targeting Danny Green.
Ah, yeah, Danny Green just had a return bout, and he just won what a lot of people feel was an uninspired 12-round decision, but he came out and took care
yeah.
of business. He's been away for 3 years. That means
yeah.
Brian is definitely looking at getting down the cruiserweight to fight Danny, because Danny is not going to fight at heavy, so.
Yeah, he's
a cruiserweight. Minto's a cruiserweight. He can't fight heavyweight.
Brian signed a contract with an Australian-based company, Excite Fight Promotions, and he's going to
then,
be going
then
down
definitely
to the
probably,
fight.
Yeah. So if he's down under, then Danny Green would definitely be, for him, down there in Australia would be the biggest money target.
Brian Mitchell, isn't he from Pittsburgh?
Yep.
Why do you need a fighter out of Pittsburgh?
Yeah. Butler, PA.
Butler, yeah, right around Pittsburgh, yeah.
Yeah.
I liked him, just not big enough.
Yeah.
Well, he should be a cruiserweight, and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. John Poor, the local kid from Boothland, fought him.
Mm-hmm.
I think he knocked Poor out in one round.
Mm.
Well, I remember Minto fought. He fought very tough and very very courageous against Chris Areola. But then I remember he went to cruiserweight, and I think he fought Marco Huck and was knocked out. So, you know.
That's tough when you're 220 pounds and you're giving away 40, 50 pounds. I can't wait to see Tyson Fury. When's that fight?
Ooh, I'm not sure. December, maybe?
Yeah, I thought that was
a while
off.
I had to laugh at that guy from Philly. What the hell was his name? Telling us
Eddie Chambers.
Yeah, was telling us that Tyson Fury's so agile now he's ready for the ballet.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to rush and dance in a ballet. That's how good he looks, he said.
I'm telling you,
a different guy.
Dr. Chris, he's been looking. He looks, I'm telling you, I mean, he's always going to be, you know, Tyson Fury. He's always going to be a bit uncoordinated, and, you know, a bit gangly and awkward. But The last few times I've seen him fight, he's really tightened up his technique. He's just
really?
His skills have improved, and he's a lot lighter on his feet than you would have. He's lighter on, you know, he's not as athletic as Vladimir Klitschko, but he can get up on his toes much better than Klitschko can.
Really?
He can fight off his toes much better than Klitschko.
Wow, you're going to surprise me if he does, you know? Well, I'd like to see it. I wish him luck. I mean, nice kid. Seems like a nice young guy.
Mm-hmm.
Wants to make a buck like everybody else, you know, in a tough sport. And what are you going
to
do?
We'll see. He knows how to promote. That's one thing about the kid. He knows how to promote. He can definitely talk the talk. And, you know, if he were to get in there and defeat Vladimir Klitschko, we would have a heavyweight champion who was very capable of being that transcendent kind of star. Because not only is he a larger-than-life physical person, but he's a larger-than-life personality. So, again, he's that kind of guy that can kind of carry the mantle of boxing as a heavyweight champion does.
Yeah, he's comical. He would be an entertaining champion, you know? Because Klitschko's dull. He fights dull and he is dull, you know?
I'm sure he mentions that. He mentions that often.
You know, I mean, he hits, grabs you, holds you. I mean, I don't know. The brother was my favorite fighter. I like the big.
What about
the big brother?
Brother was tougher.
Mm-hmm. What about the Timothy Bradley Kell Brooks fight that's supposed to be going to take place in October?
Yeah, you know, I know they've been talking about that fight. I know nothing is signed yet, but
yeah.
It's a fight that both sides are looking to make. That would be a very interesting fight. It would be if Kell Brook were to go ahead and defeat a Tim Bradley, it would be an extremely credible scalp on his young resume. At the same time, it would give Tim Bradley a chance. First of all, I'm assuming it would be a unification because both men are title holders, Kell Brook, the IBF, Tim Bradley, the WBO. So they will unify one of the two belts. Obviously, also, I would think that the winner of that fight would probably be looked at as the guy, especially if Floyd Mayweather does what he says he's going to do and step down after Berto. You know, you look at Keith Thurman, Amir Khan, Tim Bradley, Sean Porter, Kell Brook. There are a lot of guys who have a claim to second best, so to speak. Manny Pacquiao, too. But the fact of the matter is, one of the reasons why I kept saying that an Amir Khan or Keith Thurman wasn't necessarily going to get that fight with Floyd is because those guys are very dangerous fighters, but they haven't created the mandate. They haven't separated themselves as the best guy outside of Floyd Mayweather. Kell Brook, if he were to go ahead and beat Tim Bradley, he would have Tim Bradley, Sean Porter on his resume, and I think he would probably be universally considered the best guy at welterweight outside of Floyd Mayweather. He's already the number one ranked, you know, welterweight. Mayweather's considered champion by the ring. Kell Brook's ranked number one. So a fight like that with Timothy Bradley would greatly enhance his claim to the throne as well as his international appeal.
Yeah. And it's a dangerous fight for Tim Bradley. It's a very dangerous fight for Tim Bradley. It's a bad style matchup, to be honest. And you can see that in the Sean Porter fight. Because Bradley and Porter have similarities to their fight game. And I don't think Bradley is physically, as strong as Bradley is, I don't think he's physically stronger than Porter. And Kell Brook was able to successfully hold Sean Porter on the inside. That's very difficult to do because Sean Porter, that's his thing. He'll get skin to skin with you and just keep throwing punches. Kell Brook stopped that. He was able to hold him successfully. I don't see Tim Bradley, I don't see him winning. I actually, he's going to have a hard time surviving. I don't think Kell Brook can knock him out because Bradley's he's a tough dog. But if you can't let a dog be a dog, then what do you have?
That's good. You know, Bradley, every fight's tough for Bradley because he's small. He's small. And hang on, I got to go in the other room. I think Bradley's small, and every fight's an effort for him. It's life or death because he's not a big welterweight. I mean, he's strong looking, he's cut and all that, but he's not powerful.
Yeah, he's strong.
Sean Porter's powerful.
I would imagine that Bradley probably, outside of maybe Sean Porter, I would imagine that Bradley probably could get under the bench press and bench press probably more than any other welterweight. He's physically strong. It doesn't translate to punching power because he clubs with his punches. He doesn't turn his punches over.
He's got the big biceps.
Yeah, but he doesn't commit to. He doesn't know how to turn over. He doesn't turn over his punches properly. He just has poor punching technique. And the one thing I noticed, too, and I really noticed this in the Jesse Vargas fight, as he's getting a little older, and it may not even be a chronological thing in boxing years, because he's had the tough fights with Pacquiao, Provitnikov absolutely almost destroyed him in a fight he won. He's not the same guy he was 3 or 4 years ago. And there was a point in the 6th or 7th round when I thought he was about to essentially run Jesse Vargas out the ring, but he couldn't maintain the pacing. He's having a much tougher time closing distance cleanly. He's starting to get caught more closing distance. He's starting to flag more. He didn't used to get tired the way he does now. Again, I just think the wars have taken a toll. With that said, I think Tim Bradley is still capable of being tough enough to be able to out-hustle anybody, because that's what he does. He out-hustles people. Kell Brook, that's a tall tree to climb. But, again, you can't count Tim Bradley out. But at this point in time, Kell Brook looks like a comer, and Tim Bradley looks like he's on his way going the other way, unfortunately.
You know what surprises me? Why doesn't Provitnikov fight more often? Is Bob Arum mishandling him, or is it my imagination? What do you think?
Well, actually, he's not with Bob Arum. I believe he's with Artie Palullo and Banner Promotions, maybe. But I know he's not. He's not actually with Arum. He has a different promoter.
Didn't Arum bring him to this country?
Yeah, well, they do business together. He co-promotes. Arum co-promotes with, I believe it's Artie Palullo, but he co-promotes with Provitnikov's promoter, so he's not really with Arum.
Oh, okay. Looks like, you know, when he fought that guy, the kickboxer, I mean, Provitnikov lost. I think normally Arum would have all the judges in his corner if it was his fighter. You know what I mean? He would have never lost that fight. I just don't understand sometimes what the hell's going on behind closed doors, you know? And then Pacquiao had trouble with Arum. And how much money did Pacquiao have to pay to get Arum off his back? It was a fortune, wasn't it?
Oh.
Millions?
Andrew, how you doing?
I mean, they were talking about how much money Pacquiao gave him out of the Mayweather fight to get him out of his hair. Like, I don't know what the hell, you know, it was a lot of money. Billions. So.
You want to come on for a few minutes? I'll call you right back. Okay. My phone's going dead. Hey, guys, I got a friend of ours on the other line here, Mr. Edna Cherry. And he is excited about his October 3rd fight coming up. Edna, is there anything you want to tell the folks?
Hello? Hello?
My phone's going. Something's wrong with my phone.
Excited.
Edna.
You guys have any questions for Edna? You guys have any questions for Edna?
Yeah. I just want to tell Edna congratulations and ask him what he thinks of Jose Pedraza.
You guys want to know what you think of Jose Pedraza?
Well, you know what? He's a great fighter. For him to have the world title, he's not a pushover. October 3rd, I'm in a tough fight. It's not easy. With the king, we're doing everything to get prepared for this fight. We just get prepared for October 3rd.
That's great. Chris, got any questions?
No.
Okay, Z?
I'm listening.
Okay. Z, do you have any questions for Edner?
Nope, I guess not. Well, Edner, I'm going to let you go because I know you're on the way to a fight. But the guys, we're all pulling for you, and we put it on the air today.
Okay.
We appreciate everything you do, and we appreciate your friendship. Say hello to Elizabeth and the kids.
Okay, I will.
All right. I'll talk to you later on this week.
Okay, yes, sir.
Okay, see ya.
All
right. I don't know if you guys were able to hear it fully, but he is stoked about the fight.
You know, that's good. Not only is he getting a shot at the title, but remember, Edna's last few fights haven't even been televised. But he had such a devastating knockout that ESPN.com picked it up and just showed the highlight of his knockout. So for him to go, obviously, from not being televised, he's getting a co-feature slot on Showtime. So that's huge. And then to top it off, he's getting a shot at a title. So, that just shows sometimes good things come to those who wait and work for the good things that they want, right? So good for Edna. He's a great guy.
Yep. Yep, and he's been through so much in his young life. You know, his child being born with a hole in his heart, and his wife immediately having medical problems and having to be in the hospital for a long time. And, he wasn't making any money, and he was trying to get out of a contract, and that cost him a lot of money. So we're really happy that he's finally made it with a great a great management system and a terrific manager.
Yeah, Edna's an old soul too, isn't he? He's one of those. You would never guess he's 32 years old. He's just an old wise soul. So he's just an amazing person.
Yep. Yep. Chris, what do you think? Deontay Wilder is coming back on September 16th.
Who's he fighting?
He's fighting Johan De. Do you have the name there, Butch?
Yeah, Duhaufus.
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 Never heard of him.
He's a Frenchman. His biggest victory was a points win over Mario Swak, who was knocked out by Vladimir Klitschko and Alexander Povetkin. So he's a step up from his last fight, Eric Molina. So it's definitely a step up as far as quality of competition. Oh, yeah, from his last fight, this guy's a step up skill-wise. This guy's also 6'5". He's not as rugged, not as strong, or maybe not as hard a puncher as the Molina, the gentleman that he fought before. But Johan De Hesse, I can't pronounce his last name, but Johan is a stand-up European style. Deontay Wilder's athleticism, speed, and power should be able to see him through. But this guy's a much better boxer technician than the Eric Molina who Deontay Wilder fought previously. So it's definitely
a competition. Is he a legitimate Frenchman? From France?
Well, you think he'll surrender within the first few
rounds? I never saw a French heavyweight.
Yeah,
I never saw a French heavyweight. Has there ever been one? I don't remember one. I hope he's not French because I never seen a French heavyweight.
Yeah,
I hope
he's like Romanian, living in French, living in France.
Oh, living in France.
You hope he's French citizenship.
Yeah.
Nobody knows where he's from. Yeah.
Well, according to the press release, it says. I'm coming to America. It's my first debut fight in America as a heavyweight, and I'm going to bring the title back to my home in France.
He's a big guy.
Wishful thinking.
Yeah.
Wishful thinking. Going to bring the title back to France, huh? Wow. We'll see.
What's that, sir?
I was saying, what do you think, Ty?
Well, I mean, he's a decided underdog. That's actually why he's getting the fight.
Right.
Deontay Wilder.
Yeah, Deontay
Wilder. He's still progressing. He's
Deontay
still
he's going to make a few bucks. He's going to get some easy opponents. And he's going to wait for Klitschko to get gray hair. Once Klitschko gets gray hair, he's going to fight.
Alexander Povetkin is his mandatory. So he has to fight Alexander Povetkin or be stripped of the title. He had these two voluntary defenses. But after this, he will be ordered to fight Alexander Povetkin. So that fight will happen early next year. If it does not, Deontay Wilder will be stripped of the title. So, you know, he's getting these voluntary defenses, working on some skills before he has to take on who probably is universally maybe the second or third best heavyweight in the world, in Alexander Povetkin.
Mm-hmm. Great.
Well,
guys,
see.
We're up against the clock here. Chris, I want to thank you for coming on again and bringing us all the knowledge that you've got, and we really appreciate that. Ty,
we're going to see. Next week we talk about the Eagles a little bit.
We'll see what happens.
We're going to see if Kelly's the smartest Irishman on earth or he's not. Because if one thing goes wrong, Philadelphia's going to jump on him.
Yes, that's
true. If Bradford gets hurt or somebody don't make it, he's counting on, you're going to hear about it, man. Holy God.
Sure.
Well, I'm hoping. I like Kelly, and I'm wishing him luck. So we'll see. I'm going to watch it tonight. I'm going to go buy some spaghetti and make myself a big pot of spaghetti and eat it. So that's where I'm headed. All right, guys. I'll see you next week.
Have a good one, Dr. Chris.
All right. Bye now.
Hey, Ty, you want to lead us out?
Hey, you know, it's been a great show. It's nice being on with you guys again this week. We want to thank Dr. Chris for joining us, Zita, Butch, Bob is our co-pilot. And we'll see you all guys next week.
Okay. And Z's dropped, so, but we really appreciate everything you and Z do. You really add an awful lot to the program, and we really appreciate that. Ladies and gentlemen, this program is brought to you each and every night of the week in grateful appreciation of the men and women of the United States Armed Forces, men and women of police and fire services. When you're out there and you see somebody in a uniform, just give them a wink, a handshake, anything to let them know that you know that they're there. Remember, they are the ones that run into danger when you're running away. We also dedicate these programs to those who've lost their lives in the line of duty. Deputy Robert Anthony Carroll, Patrolman David Curtis, Patrolman Jeffrey Colquitt, Sergeant Thomas Batinger, Patrolman Jeffrey Yazowitz, Patrolman David Crawford, Patrolman Ricky Childers, Patrolman Randy Bell, San Diego Officer Mike Hendler, Lieutenant Mike Zerba, Newcastle County Police, Patrolman Anafa Crispin, Lakeland PD, Deputy Barbara Pell, Broward County Sheriff's Office, Chief Al Hogle, Longboat Key Police Department, Chief Jimmy Ford, Wilmington Fire Department, Highway Patrolman Alonzo Moses, Philadelphia Highway Patrol, Highway Patrolman Brian Lazaro, Philadelphia Highway Patrol, Highway Patrolman Brian Murphy, Plymouth Township PA, Highway Patrol, Lieutenant Bob Neary, Philadelphia Fire Department, Deputy Chief Mike Godwin, Philadelphia Fire Department, MIT Officer Sean Collier, Sergeant Mike Wilson, Charlotte County Sheriff's Office, Deputy Jonathan Scott Pine, Orange County Sheriff's Office, Patrolman Robert Germain, Windermere, Florida, Highway Patrol, Trooper Chelsea Richards, Florida Highway Patrol, Lieutenant Joyce Craig Lewis, Philadelphia Fire Department, Patrolman Charlie Condit, Tarpon Springs Police Department, Patrolman Robert Wilson, Philadelphia Fire Department. Although you may be 10-7 at this point in time, my brothers and sisters, sometime we'll be 10-10 at the table of the Lord. Until that time, may the roads rise up to meet you. May the winds be always at your back. May the rains fall softly on your fields and the sun shine lightly on your face. Until we meet again, may the good Lord keep you and your families always in the hallow of his name. Good night.
Shem alek ma yilama, shem ahezahir ma, son ashen evorat fet hakuig again ma yilama. fiery blade engaged to lead, he'd break the bravest in the field.
Good night, Bob. We love you and we miss you.